Okay, everybody, welcome to another day of spiritual truth. I said today I was going to say this to everybody. This show is in memory of Chris Martin. My partner Joel Martin's wife died this morning, so every show that I do today is for Jolie. Miss you, Jolie. Sorry, and I wish I were there. Now, having said that, I'm with David Wilcox, our Mr. Famous David Wilcox, who we had him up on the bonus article as the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. You sound like the Jesse James thing. You know, Jesse James, you know. Now, so now, actually, when you told me about it, I was like, okay, whatever. And then you sent me the photos. I put the article up, and I looked at them, and I studied them with, you know, with several people. Your bone structure is even the same. So then I was talking to a woman, I have to call her, who says that she is a reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. You know, major difference.
I've seen her case. Yeah, it's a fascinating case.
Yes, and I'm going to be talking to her, and she says that her bone structure fits Marilyn Monroe's. Her DNA, now that's what we're going to talk about today, is as close to Marilyn Monroe's as you can get. I'm like, whoa. How can your DNA be like Marilyn Monroe's?
I'm not even sure how you'd test for that, but okay.
Maybe she didn't even understand what she was saying.
Right.
Or the woman, I did not speak to the actual woman. She was being translated to me through, you know, telephone talk.
Okay.
So someone maybe just used DNA, not knowing really what DNA means.
Yeah, as far as I know, there are reincarnation researchers who are trying to look for DNA-specific tags to indicate reincarnation, and thus far there has not been a successful testing method that could validate a reincarnation that way, as far as I know.
Okay, now you might want to, I hope Mr. Robert Schwartz is listening to us, because he wrote The Courageous Souls, and I got to tell you, Robert.
May the Schwartz be with him.
Yeah. Mr. Schwartz, I think he was, you know, I've got to say to him that we did his book, and we were going to do case by case, and he's a newbie. He started this in 2003, and he needs to listen to you talk about this, so go ahead.
I think just to recap for people who didn't hear the last show, if you wanted to go to my website, www.divinecosmos.com, we have the transcript that I just put up last night of our last program. And it really read well. I mean, I think you ask excellent questions, Margaret, and I just want to thank you for being such a great host.
Thank you. I've been a journalist for 30 years. Thank God someone noticed.
Yeah, it definitely shows. It definitely shows because, you know, I talk so darn fast that most people can't even keep up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like point for point with me, so it's a really refreshing and different type of show to do.
Well, I've been doing this, let's see, before we were talking about that a few minutes ago. Joel Martin and I were serious journalists. I think this is serious, but unfortunately the pens and tellers of the world think this is nonsense. But we were doing, you know, murders and mafia and foreign affairs and all that kind of stuff. And I wasn't having affairs with congressmen, but I was, you know, have you heard about that, the Barbara Walters thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was doing my job, actually. I was too busy to be having affairs with congressmen. So, you know.
You had a lot of fun, though, you know?
Oh, I had fun, but I wasn't having an affair with congressmen or anybody, actually. I had children, a husband, and my job was enough for me. And Joel Martin was the same way. And then one day we said, you know what? We're going to start doing the paranormal, the supernatural, metaphysical, call it what you will. Everybody has a different name for it. And we started doing documentaries. So, and I, as you saw, my teachers were Ruth Montgomery, Elizabeth Kubler-Rochester, and so I've been very fortunate. So that's probably why I could keep up. Now let's talk about what you're doing today. Enough of me, because that's all on the website if you want to. And by the way, you can download David's show too on our site now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you can. If you're going on vacation, you have an iPod. Those wonderful things called iPods. You can download David's shows. So now you're a big, great addition to us. Tell me what's cooking.
Well, here's the deal. We are going into a change on the planet, and as far as your listeners are concerned, in the last show, we really didn't cover too much ground on that issue.
Okay.
And so what I was suggesting for today's program before we went on the air here is to focus in on the DNA component of changes that can actually be measured that are happening in our world.
And okay.
So before we launch into DNA as a particular subject, I would say let's first look at the overall curve of our civilization. Think about the fact, for example, that...
I think we're declining.
Well, but I want to paint a picture for you so that you can think about it in a different way than maybe some people would. Think about the fact, for example, that up until Benjamin Franklin, actually, if you wanted to cook a meal, you were actually cooking over open flames, meaning you'd have like a fireplace or you'd have some sort of hearth or something. The closest you'd ever get to like a closed container would be like a big pot or a cauldron or something.
And that would be the little houses in prairie times when they did the hanging of the pot in the hearth, remember?
Yeah,
that?
Exactly. So there was a lot of soup and that kind of stuff, and you know, if you were going to grill something, you'd have the grills right over the flames. And it was only with Benjamin Franklin who actually got the idea, hey, you know, maybe we could build a metallic enclosure where the fire is on the inside and then you have burners on top.
By the way, Benjamin Franklin belonged to all the secret societies and was a huge metaphysician, just FYI, people.
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
So if you think about this, we have a heritage of technology, and this technology wasn't very advanced until extremely recently. If you look at the, I feel like in a way we've been robbed by these globalists who have hidden the evidence of UFO crashes and so forth from us and all the technologies that could be derived from them, that we've kind of lost touch with this ascending spiral that humanity's been on. But if you go back to the 1800s, I lived for several years in Rosendale, New York. Now, a miner happened to discover that a particular stone called dolostone could be ground up and heated, and then the powder would actually form back into stone once you got it wet.
Okay, I'm shaking my finger. Whoa, 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 whoa. So this is not the Edgar Cayce time. This is another time.
This is the 1800s.
I love it.
Rosendale, New York.
I love these conversations. I really do actually love them. So, okay, so this is
early 1800s, like around 1815 or something like that.
Do you know what lifetime this would have been? 5th, 10th, 100th? Just another one.
What was the question?
Do you know what lifetime this would have been? Was it your 5th one? Is it your 10th one? Or is it just another one? No, seriously, people have, they count them, they know them. You know, or is it just another one for you?
Well, I wasn't alive in Rosendale, as far as I know, during this time.
Oh, I thought you were saying it was you were reincarnated.
I'm still painting a picture to give us a sense of things.
Okay, good.
So what I'm basically saying is that this was the first manifestation of cement. Up until that point, you could not have a liquid that you could pour into place and then make rock.
Yeah.
So the reason, that might not sound like much to us, but if you realize that, like, houses were usually made of bricks, and they were never, any building was never more than, like, 3 or 4 stories at the most, because it just wasn't very stable. And all of a sudden, you have this pourable material that can make gigantic structures, like giant bridges, like the Brooklyn Bridge and the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty, and even the Erie Canal, which allowed for, you know, shipping to happen like never before. These were huge technological advances. And so in Rosendale, New York, the only way they could make cement was to blast it out of the rocks in the ground and use this dolostone stuff. And as a result of that, we have caves all over the place in Rosendale. You can still go in there. And, in fact, I remember one time I was walking through the woods, and I just suddenly saw this gigantic crevice going 300 foot down. And there was no rope around it or no fence or signs or anything. It just was there. And so it was an interesting phenomenon to me to realize that once the financial interest in something is no longer there, the money goes away and it just falls into decay.
Well, there's a lot of financial interest in concrete. There's a lot of people making
But here's what happened. There was a technological innovation. Somebody figured out that you could take ordinary limestone, grind it up, and add this lime to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could make cement without having to have this special rock, because up until then, Rosendale had a monopoly on cement. If you wanted to build a building of any decent size, you had to use Rosendale cement.
Okay.
And so, like, the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty and most of the New York City, of the early New York City sidewalks, a lot of big buildings, you couldn't make a big building before this. So what this actually did is it paved the way for the Industrial Revolution. It paved the way for larger buildings so you could have bigger factories and all that stuff.
Yeah, and that's an Aries, and astrologically that's Aries, Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
So where are we going with this?
Well, where we're going is that it's very interesting that I would come back to this place where the Industrial Revolution was birthed from, and this is where I started to do readings. There was a cave less than a mile from my house.
Uh-huh.
And
in this lifetime you started?
Yeah, in this lifetime.
Okay.
And it's like society comes back around, but what I'm saying is there's been this accelerating technological curve.
Mm-hmm.
We take big buildings for granted now. it's hard to remember that only a couple hundred years ago, we couldn't have even made them if we wanted to.
We take everything for granted now.
I know.
David, that's the sad thing. That's why I said we're on a decline. And I'm being very serious. We take everything for granted.
That's definitely true. But, you know, I think that our we got intoxicated with technology, and these guys were like rock stars to us.
Uh-huh.
Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, Einstein, you know, these names had huge weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then along comes the nuclear explosion in 1945 in the midst of the most heady technological developments you could ever imagine. People are suddenly able to, like, eliminate a lot of the dishes, you know, doing the dishes and doing the laundry and having to go to the store every day. You have a refrigerator now. You have the ability to talk to each other over the telephone line. You can hear voices over the air on a radio. All these things, electric lights, so you can actually stay up at night without candlelight.
They all were invented by metaphysicians, or people might call them supernatural, whatever. They were all invented by men, great men, who in time of thought or in meditation, they got the ideas. And I have a lot of their transcripts right from their diaries. John Martin and I have it. And most of the time, they were in a twilight sleep or in meditation. In fact, John Martin's coming out with a new book called The History of the Paranormal. So these were metaphysicians, and they knew this came from the other side. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so.
And I think that after 1945, the bomb went off, and then everybody realized that this thing that we'd become so intoxicated with could actually be the instrument of our destruction.
Well, that's the dark side playing with the light side.
Right, and I think that there's been a sort of, there was, you know, a lot of people said World War I was like the end of the world, the war to end all wars, but it really wasn't until
this
the bomb
war
went off that we saw that we actually could destroy the whole planet with our technology.
Well, you notice that this war is probably the war to end all wars, and everybody's talking about they have the bomb, and they have the bomb, and everything. Like, our poor kids today are like, what? Who's got the bomb? It's like, you know, they put the little things in your hands, pick the right hand, pick the left hand.
Right.
Where's the marble? Well, that's what it's now. Who's got the bomb? Who's going to let it go? It's scary to listen to people. Who was it the other night? Some silly boy on, he wasn't silly. They were trying to make him look silly. Said he was, they called him braggadocious for saying that he had had, mentioning on his eHarmony, it was some dating thing, that he had had lunch with the Secretary of Defense. And they said, do you think that's a big deal? And he said, well, yeah, especially when he's carrying the suitcase that could blow us all up. And they didn't get it. And I sort of got what the kid was saying, you know what I mean? Don't you get it? We're very vulnerable. So, I mean, he may not have said it. He may not present himself completely correctly for these little, you know, judgmental eyes out in TV land. But I got what the kid was saying. And I think that's what you're saying. We are now all aware that the bomb exists. And this is, and God knows who could push it at any time, when any mood.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the schizoidal nature of 1950s American culture.
Yeah.
You have, like, Leave It to Beaver and stuff like that.
Father Knows Best, yeah. Stupid
shows. And that's all happening on one layer, and then underneath is, like, air raid drills. I mean, kids now don't have that.
But see, Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best never existed. It was just in television.
Exactly. Exactly. Television created a reality, and then people are trying to adhere to that reality in their own lives, and increasingly disillusioned when they don't.
Exactly. They create a false reality, so everybody thinks that their life is dysfunctional,
right,
and that the rest of the world is living like Beaver Cleaver, and that Father Knows Best. It didn't happen, ever. So everybody's just, every single family on this universe is dysfunctional, if they want to keep using that word, because everybody's just trying to get by, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so go ahead.
And I think that I really think the next big, we're kind of doing a reading on American culture right now. I think the next big turning point is 1963, obviously.
Yeah.
Because the Cuban Missile Crisis, first of all, before then, was sort of like the big realization that the nuclear thing could actually go completely for real.
Yeah.
Up until then, it had just been simmering.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, Kennedy gets shot.
Yeah.
And that really changed our society and made people realize that there was some sort of monstrous secret conspiracy, because you don't have a bullet zinging around 18 different ways.
No, and they can prove now that Sirhan Sirhan didn't shoot Bobby, and JFK was not shot alone in Dallas, and you know, Martin Luther and Jack Ruby and blah, blah. I mean, we knew all that. That's pretty old news. Okay, so now we understand we have a dark force. Then where are we going?
Well, what I'm saying is that this is all about the collective awakening of humanity that's going on.
So are we awake yet, David?
Well, I think it's happening. I think that, for example, one of the things I want to bring up, and this starts to get back into our DNA question, is there's a study called the Flynn effect.
The what?
The Flynn effect, F-L-Y-N-N.
Oh, good. I like things I don't know about. Flynn.
It goes through the entire 20th century. They've been looking at 20 different countries, some of which are they're third world and not highly technological. And all across the board, regardless of whether, you know, there's more access to literacy information or not, all these countries are showing at least a 3% increase in IQ every 10 years. And that's been happening reliably through the entire 20th century.
You could have fooled me if you watched Jaywalking on Jay Leno. I mean, Joel and I talk about all the time, and we're really upset about it, but you could really have fooled me that their IQ is... Is it our country, or is it the Asian countries? Because is our country included in that?
Well...
Because I got to tell you, from what I see, they don't even know their president of the United States, except that they all know Bush because they hate him, but they don't know, the only reason they know who Abraham Lincoln is because he's on a penny, for God's sakes. I mean, truly, have you ever watched Jaywalking, how sad that is?
I haven't seen it, no.
Well, if you're so busy, if you're studying this, you need to watch Jaywalking. It'll make you sick to your stomach. He has
so teacher. He goes jaywalking on the street and talks to ordinary
exactly.
people.
Exactly. And they're not ordinary people. Some of them are doctors, some of them are teachers, some of them are ordinary. And the doctors and the teachers are dumber than the ordinary people. They don't know anything. And I mean, they can tell you what Jell-O is, and they can tell you what Ben and Jerry is. Oh, sometimes they'll say the cartoon, but mostly they know it's ice cream. But they can't tell you about anything about our government, our past. They don't know. They. If you ask them about a major name, like they think it's an actor. It's so sad, and they think it's funny. And I'm a big person who says they shouldn't put that on the air because, I mean, listen, you should always have fun. But when we're showing how dumb our population is to the rest of the world, because Jay Leno goes all over the world, his show, we're being laughed at, not laughed with.
Right.
So when you say, when you tell me that our intellect is increasing, please tell me where.
Well, actually, if you want to get right down to the scientific data.
I do.
It's not book learning. It's not facts and figures, mathematics, or literacy. It actually is abstract, symbolic thinking that is actually increasing the most.
Well, these people like rides at Disneyland, and that too makes me a little scared that they like flying pink elephants and fake jaws. So
our ability to solve abstract problems and to understand symbols, to understand
ritual and symbols. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so, but the point is, I think what you're describing, which is more of a social degradation curve that can be seen.
Okay.
It does represent a sort of polarization that's happening. In other words, there are some people, many people, who are having spontaneous breakthroughs to paranormal experience that they've never had before. I mean, you know, I get 120 some odd emails a day. Some days it's more, some days it's less.
Join the club.
And I got like three emails today, just in a couple hours, of people that are suddenly having these massive paranormal experiences, one of whom, I'm not going to say too much about him, but suffice it to say that he's a mental health professional, highly regarded, and he's writing me because he's freaked out, going, okay, this stuff is happening to me, and I can't say anything about it to anyone because, you know, I have this career and I have this professional life. And
There. I was asked that this week about a major investment firm who wants to... get involved in our show. And I said, if anyone asks me one more time, here's who calls and talks to us. Wall Street, the president, I mean, not this goof, but most of the White House, doctors, lawyers, rabbis, priests, the person who introduced me to my first medium when I was an adult, I found my own when I was a kid, was a Monsignor of the Catholic Church. So why these people are always worried about their jobs, and if more of them came out and just told the truth, what a nice day it would be.
Well, I think it's starting to happen. You see people who are willing to take their PhD degree and go into something totally alternative, And yeah, they may get laughed at by their colleagues in the scientific community, but then they discover that they're actually much more successful financially and that they have a much wider audience and
they're
able
to... There's the ticket, successful.
Yeah.
I mean, successful monetarily. Did they ever think maybe they just might want to do something? Everybody wants to be have enough money. That's not my point. But sometimes they do it for the money, not the belief system. That's where we're all getting confused. Those of us on this side going, whoa, they do it for the money? For the fame? Because I know one who did it just simply for the money, who believes nothing about the whole thing. And Jill and I look at each other and we're like, okie dokie. Then we know many others who do it all the time and don't get hardly anything. So it depends on how good a marketer you are for yourself.
Absolutely. But the point is that I would say that spirituality, consciousness, and higher teachings is kind of like the new gold rush. I mean,
yeah.
There's the 500% growth in organic grocery sales per year that's been going on for over a decade.
But do you consider that metaphysical, or do you consider that health consciousness?
I consider that all part of a greater spiritual awakening that's happening in the planet, where people are seeing that they have to feed themselves for the energy body, not just for the physical body. They may not know that consciously.
Good, so then say it, because the people who think they're doing green, who are going green, they don't think they're part of your world or my world.
You can't make a blanket statement like that. I think some of them are definitely not.
I'm telling you, we have debates on this. They do not see themselves as part of our world. They see themselves, they looked at Gore, and they do not consider themselves metaphysicians, spiritualists, or anything else. They consider themselves green people. So it's a pretty good, let's just say the blanket goes up to your shoulders.
I would just say nonetheless, even if that's all they are, that on some level that represents a progression of consciousness, because they're breaking out of this idea that they are this separated little being that can just do whatever it wants to its environment.
I agree
and not
with
have
you.
Any consequences.
I agree with you. I'm just saying to you, please make this comment, because they don't see themselves. Maybe you have 2 friends or 5 friends or 15 friends who think it, but most of the people we meet don't think they're anything like us. But they're green and they recycle.
Well, the thing that I find so amazing is that I meet people all the time in contexts where there's not a predisposition for them to be inclined to metaphysics or to the kind of stuff I would talk about, and they are becoming increasingly fascinated with this. And in your own industry, it should be obvious. I mean, there's so many shows coming out that have highly paranormal subtext to them.
Darling, Joe Martin put the first book out. I put the first documentary out. I've been doing this for the paranormal stuff for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so, yes, but they're not at all interested. The producers, they wire these people. They give them fake information. Please, don't ask me to tell you what goes on in my world, in this world. That's why it's very disheartening. They're not in it for the reality. They're in it for the C-A-S-H and ratings.
Well, but why is the C-A-S-H there? It's there because
I understand
there's
what you're
hunger we
say that
all
hear
the time. About this stuff.
We say that all the time, the executives, and they understand that. They acquiesce.
Yeah.
But they still think it's just a bunch of knuckleheads who are out of work, who are couch potatoes, and who don't think, and who need some sort of hope, or need they look at it like a on-air comic book. That's how it's been described to us. On-air comic book.
Mm.
How would you like them apples been thrown at you?
Well,
kind of rotten.
That gets back into the sort of elite opinion of the so-called useless eaters, and you know that there's in some levels, in some circles, a great disdain for the so-called common man or common person.
This isn't me saying that. I'm just repeating
I know you're not saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. This is.
That doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me to hear you say that, honestly.
We're going, guys, look at ARP has this thing. 97, I mean, we're fighting for our lives in there, and we're telling them, we're giving them the stats, we're telling them who calls, Wall Street, White House, you know, we tell them about J.P. Morgan, you know, astrology. Oh, Mark, they're just a bunch of losers who want to come, a new topic. They're through with dating. Now they want to watch these UFO crazy people. It's just a UFO comic. It's a comic book. And that's how they describe it. And we just realize, and like, that's why we're doing this. And we're not editing ourselves, because we've left most of the best information on the editing room floor. That's why we have a vault on this site, so people can go see the things we couldn't put in the shows, the documentaries.
Yeah, how about that?
And they make us put in Shermer's and Randy's, and this is what they call it, balance. It's not balance. It's prejudice. And yet, why do we... We are absolutely forced to put them on or we don't air.
Wow. Now that's
Did you know that?
That is an influential thing that you just said.
And let them all hear me, because they all know it. So I make Randy and Shermer, Michael Shermer, who makes a fortune saying we're crazy, I make him miserable on every show I can. Because I ask him every question and he doesn't have an answer. Why? I say to him, prove to me that this doesn't exist. Prove it. But he can't. Yet we can give documented cases, we can give studies, we can give all this stuff. At the end of the day, he wins. Not with my viewing audience, by the way. Not with Princeton, and not with the Duke, where our shows go and they're used. But with the network executives and his stupid little magazine, and we're stuck every time. Mark, you got to put Sherman for balance. Have you ever heard anything so bizarre in your life?
Well, it's only bizarre until you understand that there is a hand that's trying to not let this stuff get to be taken seriously. And the fact is that only gullible people are going to buy into these skeptics' explanations in the first place, because
they have
as ridiculous
none.
As anything else.
They don't have an explanation.
Right. It's like they worship the doubt.
I know.
The doubt becomes like a spiritual path that says, well, this obviously can't be true, so no matter how outrageously I leap for something else, that's got to be the answer, because it just can't be this.
All I can say is, it just doesn't exist, and I go, really? Okay, here's this doctor at UCLA. Here's a doctor at Princeton.
Right.
Here's this, here's that. All that means nothing, and all they can say is, oh, it just doesn't happen. You're just making it up. And somehow the networks think that's okay. A&E, History, Discovery, everybody, are you listening? Chair?
Well, you know, it would appear that there are some people at certain levels of the pyramid in those organizations that are part of a secret society that very much has an agenda.
Absolutely.
And are trying to direct the flow of media and information as it gets out to the people. They can't control the internet, obviously. And
that's
so
why we're
able
here.
To do things like this and not be censored. But
that's right.
But the old media, the newspapers, magazines, television, and radio, that goes out over Clear Channel and all that, yeah, it's very difficult to get out anything resembling the truth. And what you're saying actually does make a lot of sense to me, because it is entirely the case. You almost never see a program that doesn't involve some sort of ridiculous skeptical bashing with these people who tend to be very arrogant, egotistical,
and
self-righteous.
Hateful. Yeah, they're hateful. They're just plain out hateful.
Yeah, and they feel that just because someone is suggesting a different perspective, that gives them the right to treat
Call
them as if they're so
crazy,
yeah.
ridiculous, stupid. Oh, we've been called everything. Again, I don't know how many years you've been doing this. We've been doing it for 30 years. And
I've been a public figure for 10. I've been.
Well, I've been a public figure for a long time, and from anchoring to hosting, and I had to keep it secret so it didn't hurt my children. And then someone once in the East found out that I went to an astrologer, and my children were at prep school, and oh my God, the trouble that my one oldest daughter went through at prep school. And mother, don't let anybody know you do this or no. And finally I said, you know what, whatever. I mean, I wasn't even telling about astrology. They only found out that I went to an astrologer. They should have seen me when I was a kid. I was going to mediums and psychics since I was 8. And but, you know, if you live in a cultured society where your husband's a CEO of a major international company and your children are in prep school, God help you. If you're not at the club playing a bridge and you're at an astrologer, because your kids are going to pay the piper. I know mine did. And my kids today, my one in particular says, please don't let many people know you do this, because it's going to hurt my daughter. Hurt. Now we've passed it down another generation. Not me. And I'm like, listen, I'm not hiding in the cave for you or anybody else. But you see, she remembers how she was treated because her mother went to an astrologer. She's afraid it's going to happen to her daughter, who's a little tyke, because Grammy is doing this thing. Oh, I don't care, I'm doing it, because my granddaughter will understand it perfectly. But do you see how it goes?
Well, I think that there's a big schism, between the old and the new. And the old is just screaming and lashing. It's like the wounded lion that will attack anything near it on the way down. And the people who are not able to see the changes that are happening, they're getting very rattled. Their cage is getting shaken. And they're starting to realize that there are bars there. It's bars that have confined their consciousness to this ridiculous so-called mainstream view of reality.
That's what I tell them. I said, you're in jail. And listen, my children believe in all this. They're just trying to protect their children. Remember, they were victimized because I was in it. Okay? Mother, who was society editor for, you know, for CBS and stuff, and doing foreign affairs and this and that, got found out. It was like, you would think I was doing the most scandalous thing in the world. I was going to an astrologer.
It's really just
they were punished.
It's another form of the persecution that's happened for so long,
mm-hmm.
except that now instead of it being a priesthood, it's become sort of like a media oligopoly that's controlling the output of information through television and newspapers, as opposed to the church having the bully pulpit.
Yeah.
So we really haven't progressed that much in that sense. It's still basically
Joel Martin,
entrenched power structure that's trying to control how we think.
My dear friend Joel Martin, again, who lost his wife this morning, do you know his two children don't speak to him because he does this and writes these books? One's an engineer and one's a big shot, something else. They haven't spoken to Joel in 20-some years.
I have a lot of people who write me all the time and say that the biggest problem that they're having with my information is that they have no one they can talk to about it.
Yep.
Among their friends. As soon as they start trying to tell people what I do, they just get the hand in the face.
That's right.
And it's really important that if you're learning about this stuff, that you just drop a few little things and let somebody be interested and ask you more questions. It's very important you don't go up to people who may not be interested and give them these long discourses, because they're just going to shut off.
And they're going to hit it. Well, that's why this show, Come or Don't Come, hit us with your best shot. That's how we do documentaries. However, we get hundreds of thousands, and I do mean hundreds of thousands, of letters at the networks, and we left that on. Jerry, can you get that? Because Joel Martin, and we get a lot of people asking us for help, but then they don't want their husband to know. They don't want their wife to know.
Exactly.
As I said, Wall Street calls all the time. What about the market? You predicted we should get gold. It is going to go down. Well, if you read the site, we have astrologers on the site. We have numerologists on the site. We have, you know, metaphysicians. We have Joel Martin. We have the best of the best. We only put the best on this site so that you can hear what's really going on, because there are a lot of people in the closet, if you will, over this, and I'm just sick of it. Just come on out and be counted.
Absolutely. And I think that the alternative becomes the mainstream, just like what they were calling alternative rock became mainstream rock. Same principle for metaphysics. Metaphysics is going mainstream. You can have these television producers in their ivory tower telling you that these people are useless eaters and they're a bunch of couch potatoes, and let's just give them comic books on
television. No, we're the producers. They're the suits. I'm
right.
The executive. I create the shows and sell them. Joel writes the books, sells them. It's these suits who come from the Ivy League schools whose daddies say no, and they're like 20 years younger than we're. They're like 18 was it, or 12 they are when they get out of college, what, 22?
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're doing. And half the time, you want to know the sad thing? Half of them call Sloan Bella, who's a really good psychic and medium, and they call her and ask her what should they do? And yet, they make us, I mean, it is so messed up that we just look at each other and at some point we just burst out laughing. Because almost everybody we know in this town, be it the head of a studio or the head of a network or, you know, whether in business affairs, their attorneys or whatever, they call Sloan, all the rock and rollers, or they call Brian Hirst. I mean, from Extra to Ozzy Osbourne to the big drummers to the anyone you name it, Joel Martin, look at our article, from Janis Joplin to the Beatles. Please, everybody, you know, whatever. But everybody hides. And if we say this is true, they'll say we made it up, yet we can document it. But Michael Shermer gets to come on for 32 seconds and say, you're crazy, you made it up, or they were on drugs. And he wins, according to the networks. The very same people who, by the way, call us for a psychic or a medium or an astrologer. Explain that.
Right, but I do think it's changing. If you look at, like, the one of the Larry King shows on UFOs recently, they had skeptics on there. But these guys just got humiliated. I mean, they looked so ignorant because they just couldn't even answer the explanations they tried to come up with. They couldn't even make an explanation.
There are. Have you seen our... Well, you said you're too busy to look at our site. But we have some of the best UFO footage ever. In fact, people are calling and trying to buy it. No, they can't buy my footage. And I'm on the vault with Larry King, and he and I are talking about it. We also have UFO footage around the White House. And from Mexico City. I write for UFO Magazine. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
And so the point is, I don't care what people think. And a lot of people believe in UFO. I thought, I'll write UFO Magazine. Nobody ever know I'm here. It's just fun. Ahead of a huge, huge blue collar, I mean a white collar organization call me. And you know, Mr. Moneybags, Mr. President of everything, Mr. somebody you'd never guess, right? Marg, why are you writing for UFO Magazine? You know what my answer was? Why are you reading it? And the question stopped. But what told me, look at, all by day, he's Mr., you know, whatever. In his private time, he doesn't look at Playboy. He reads UFO Magazine.
Right. I think we all have this thirst for the transcendental. We're looking for something more than ourselves.
Yeah.
And that there's no reason to be ashamed of that, because when you start to peer through the veil and look at the deeper reality that we're all a part of, it becomes so phenomenally vaster than the mainstream perspective that you don't even have the ability most of the time to keep your mind open enough to take it in. And what I was hoping we could veer into in our last 20 minutes or so here is...
Okay, veer, go. You steer
the
ship.
Where I see this all going.
Well, where's it going, David?
My understanding is, first of all, that one of the things the film is going to be about is the idea that we have been led to believe that the brain is the mind.
The film, you're meaning your film.
Yeah,
sorry,
my film is Convergence, the movie. We're doing a Hollywood film. I'm actually trying to get the screenplay finished right now, and it's sort of the summarization and bringing together of various elements of my work over the last... I've been researching this stuff for basically 20 years. So we're trying to bring all that together.
Well, you're in Malibu. Call Spielberg.
We have a lot of interesting connections. We have not got a director yet, but that's one of the things we're working on. So anyway, the point is that we believe that the mind is the brain, and there's so many scientists, just like the UFO documentaries, if you were going to go into this thing, you have scientists that are proving that the mind cannot be localized within the brain. And they're being completely discounted and marginalized and shoved off to the side.
Wait, so the mind isn't in the brain? We have five brains. So where is the mind?
Well, it appears that there is an energetic component to consciousness. In other words, you have to start thinking of the idea of your mind as if it was occurring in an energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And then the energy field interfaces with the physical body, thus creating consciousness. Now, let me give you one example that's very strange about this. There's a scientist from Cambridge University who studied people with a condition that puts water in their brain called hydroencephaly.
Yes, and that's a horrible thing where the people's heads get really swollen, yes.
Right, and now they put shunts in your skull so that it drains out the fluid. But back in the early days, they didn't do that. And so eventually what happens is that your brain gets compressed up against the side of the skull by the pressure of the fluid.
God, I hate that.
And in
poor
some
people.
Cases, people have so little brain tissue left that it's only like the size of a slice of bologna. It's gotten pushed so much. And yet, in some of these cases, now most of the time, these people die or they're severely retarded. But the fact remains that in about 10 to 15% of the cases this scientist was looking at, they were actually fully functioning and normal people and could continue to think and continue to interact and remember things just like everything was fine.
Yeah, if you've watched any kind of television, you've seen them in any of the science shows. Yeah, you've seen them. Ben Stein. Yeah. But, you know, where does a thing come from? I've lost my mind. You know, that all those old sayings always mean something. They don't say I've lost my soul, I've lost my brain. They say I've lost my mind, which is sort of going in the direction you're going.
Well, yeah, and what I'm ultimately saying is that we have a multidimensional personality. We have an aspect of ourselves, we have multiple aspects of ourselves
mm-hmm.
that we don't normally have any awareness of.
Yeah.
And my first touch of that was having an out-of-body experience when I was 5, and being in a different body that looked like my own, but my body was sleeping in bed at the same time. And I'm seeing myself from a distant location.
Many people have had that.
Right. And that was the beginning of my realizing, okay, well, this body that I have is lighter, and I can float in it, and, you know, I seem to but I could still think and I still had my consciousness.
The difference is a lot of people don't want to own it. You've owned it and made it your life's mission.
Right. I couldn't turn back from that. I mean, that for me broke any addiction to the material perspective, because I said this body is not going to be all there is. If this body gets damaged, I'm going to be back up in this floating thing, and I'll still exist. I'll still think, and I'll still be me.
So that's why you're saying the mind is not part of the brain.
Well, yeah, you have people that have had near-death experiences where the body is clinically brain dead, and mm-hmm. yet they're still thinking, and then when they come back into the body, the brain waves reactivate.
Mm-hmm.
But they've had a continuity of consciousness and have actually seen things going on in the operating room that could later be proven to be correct.
Yeah, give us some of your degrees. Where'd you go to school?
I have a bachelor's degree in psychology from SUNY New Paltz, State University of New York at New Paltz. And I had kind of a master's degree equivalent in terms of the internships for suicide hotline counseling and that sort of thing. I did 7 years of intuitive counseling for clients between 1998 and 2005. I am retired from that mostly because of the enormous demand.
And what does your website get a day?
How many hits do we get?
Yeah, approximately.
It's like 10,000 unique visits a day, I think.
Unique visits. And then how often are you on the road giving lectures? These are just things for network execs to listen to, because they track us like crazy. They track me every day.
Well, right now I'm doing one or two shows a month, and we have lines wrapping around two hallways of people trying to get into the room because it's so popular.
Okay, let's not call them shows. Let's call them something else, because show implies, you know, it's like woohoo circus or like a.
I've done expos. I did the Conscious Life Expo, which is one of the biggest new.
So they're
new
not
age.
Shows. Yeah, they know it there, but they're not shows. You're teaching in those places, are you?
Oh
not?
Yeah, no. This is where I get up on stage.
Yeah.
I have in some cases up to like 500 PowerPoint slides. And I'm going through the hard-hitting, bullet-point, scientific stuff to show that all the things that I'm talking about can be validated and backed up with hard scientific facts. I would never want to go out into the public and talk about these things on a take-my-word-for-it basis without having the hard empirical proof to underline every point that I make so that you cannot easily dispute it. You can still question the science, but in so doing, you're going up against academic professionals who have this background.
You know why I asked you all that? Because some little smart aleck from Harvard or Yale is going to say, did you hear what school he went to? But see, then I led you down the path where you can say, you have proof for everything you talk about, 500 slides, whatever it is you said, and you back it up with academia.
Absolutely.
And major, major credentials. However, you had to go find it, and you could back it up. So Yale, Harvard, Princeton's pretty cool, because Princeton studies the anomalies, as does Duke. But this is what we're up against. The little, you know, the boys in the suits with the cocky little country club membership who play lacrosse. And not that my son, you know, and my son-in-law and stuff, they came from there too, but they were really open-minded and cool kids. But unfortunately, we inherit the little newbies knuckleheads. And you're listening to me, boys? Because I sure hope so. But the first thing they'll ask me is, where do these people come from? Do they even have degrees? Do you understand? So that's why I let you say that.
Well,
it's my pleasure.
Absolutely. And I just want to point out that there's a Harvard PhD.
Oh my God, there's Yale's, there's Harvard. They all go into this. But
his name is Dr. James Strick, and he wrote a book called Sparks of Life, showing an impressive political campaign in the 19th century to suppress any and all evidence of spontaneous generation, meaning life forms occurring spontaneously out of otherwise inanimate matter. And there was a massive conspiracy involving Louis Pasteur and his colleagues to suppress and stifle any of that. Now, if that had never been stifled, and the easy laboratory experiments were continued to be done, we would now know without any shadow of doubt that little microbes can appear out of like beach sand that's been sterilized, heated to 1,000 degrees Celsius, and then placed in distilled water. And by nothing more than that, you're getting these little critters growing out of this sterilized medium. Now, if you look at that as just one of hundreds and hundreds of data points, I mean, the format of radio is not really conducive to me being able to just drop 50 different pieces of data, but I have them.
Oh, no. I mean, it is, because people are now listening to radio more than they're watching television, because nobody really wants to see everybody's breasts and people making out at all hours of the day. So, actually, people are going to radio. I have the stats right here. So, it's conducive to radio. If they listen, either they believe you, you speak well, you're very confident in what you're saying. Either they do or they don't. And sometimes I think it's better on radio, because the more you show them, the more they want. And so I think it's actually better this way sometimes.
And by the way, I'm just going to read something. I told you that I had this guy who's a mental health professional,
mm-hmm.
who writes me this morning and says he's terrified of losing his career. I'm not going to give any of the evidence that about where he is or who he is.
No, don't name names. Just.
But I will say, he says, I have a lot to lose in terms of credibility and integrity. Monetarily, I could care less. I'm requesting anonymity in what I'm about to tell you. In March 2008, I had a dream where I remember saying, quote, I stargated here from 26 years in the future. I am a master copy of myself.
Yeah.
At that time, I had no idea what Stargate meant, so I researched it and I found your site, David. Since this dream, I've heard a voice on three separate occasions right before I'm falling asleep at night. During the first time I heard this voice, I received two visualizations. I've only told one person and have verified the conversation with date and time on the email I sent explaining this conversation I had with the voice. I received directives as well as other information from this voice. As a therapist, da-da-da-da-da, in mental health, I cannot come out and say anything regarding the voice and visions due to the ridicule and loss of credibility factor towards my business.
Yeah, they'll say he's heard too many people and he's gone cuckoo.
I'd love to discuss this conversation I had with the voice, but would like to remain anonymous to protect my business integrity and interests. I'm confident your intuitive and psychic abilities will recognize my statement and intentions are the truth.
See, you couldn't put this on the air because they'd cut it and say, okay, if he doesn't come on and do the interview, bye.
Right.
So you can do it here. Now, here's the news. If you go to our vault, I have about 60 people who've said what he said, and they said they've been left, we had a Stargate, an agreement with the United States and the aliens, if you, whatever you call them, and different planets, and they would, you know, we would send babies up there, and they would leave babies here, and we have several of the children who now feel abandoned because they want to go home.
Mm.
They're aliens. So none of this is new to me. None of it.
Yeah, in fact, as you may know, I actually did get the chance to interview someone who has a direct knowledge of these Stargate programs, and in fact, it's not a hoax. It's not just something on Sci-Fi Network.
Listen, I had 50 different people who didn't know each other, and they all tell me the same story. I remember my one daughter who believes in all this stuff, and if you saw my favorite Martian, that would be my daughter, who said, I don't know if you read the article, when she was little, she said she was an alien. That's the first thing she said out of her mouth. I'm like, what? Because you're not my mommy and you're not my daddy. So I wrote about it. I called it My Favorite Martian in UFO Magazine. One of their most read articles, actually.
Wow.
At any rate, we were interviewing all these aliens who now live on planet Earth. And I remember she came in. She was in grade school and she walked in and she said, And the creator of CAA, Creative Artist, was there. I mean, there were some big boys there that day.
Yeah.
And she said to all of us, you better not be mean to the aliens, because you're being mean to me. And they looked at me, I'm like, whatever, you know. And they looked at me, and they're like, Mark, did you hear what your daughter said? I said, they go, you've been letting her read the transcripts? I said, oh, yeah. I said, no, she thinks she's a little Martian, whatever, let's just get working. I mean, I could have cared less. It was like, TikTok, keep working, one beat, let's go. And everybody sort of looked at me and said, okay, if you're going to take time staring at me, go back to your offices. And so we had all these aliens we were interviewing, but she was adamant, do not be mean to them. And that's, you know, I wrote that, My Favorite Martian. And it's true, and she doesn't like to discuss it today, because like your friend, you know, she's in a major position in her world of work, and you know, it's not what you talk about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't really, you know, I'm at the age like, woohoo, I've always been that way. I don't care. But a lot of people do, and Joel doesn't care, and you don't care. And when I say I don't care, I mean you'll fight the fight. We're not fighting. We're just standing here saying this is what we know, this is what we believe. And if someone calls me wacky, I'm like, okay, bye. I mean, it really doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect you. But unfortunately, this poor man, you know, I'm sorry for him, because he'd probably do best to just step out and say, this is what happened. And he'd find he'd have a bigger clientele, because there are more people out there who don't know where to go because so they come to us and do documentaries and get ridiculed.
Right.
We don't ridicule them.
Right.
But the network execs do, and they think, oh, good, we're putting the circus freaks on. When actually, we're actually enjoying them. And we're now putting a lot of them on the vault because they're fascinating as heck to listen to. And
sure.
They can't be making this stuff up,
right.
Or else they ought to be some of the most brilliant writers in Hollywood.
And to use the pipeline that I spent the first half hour laying again, it appears that we're all being guided through an energetic expansion where this sort of online part of our minds that's sort of energetic and outside the brain, that part of our minds is not just this static thing that sits there and doesn't change. That part of our minds, the energetic part, if the energy starts to sort of move more quickly, or as you might say, vibrate faster, then in turn our minds vibrate faster and our thoughts increase in terms of their basic intelligence. And so the Flynn effect, this 3% IQ increase over 20 countries for the last century, appears to be an energetic phenomenon. And I have 120 some odd different references from mainstream NASA studies that have never been put together before, showing that all the planets in the solar system are having the same kind of climate change as what we see on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, why don't people get it? I mean, if you look astrologically, this is now, we're going into, or numerically, we're going into a strange cycle, 9 years of it. And if you go a year back to when the numerologist Jill St. James on our site said, watch it, Tracy Abbott Cook, who writes the astrology, said, watch it, watch the weather, watch the market. Go back 1 year ago when we started this site. Nobody remembers, because now they're going to remember. They only remember after the destructions happen. They don't listen to us when we say it's coming. The housing market's going to fall. It's coming. Although, you know, we're wacky. So now I just sit back and say, when they call me now or when they call me after I've told them something, I go, what do you want me to do about it now? I told you already a year ago or 6 months ago. And, you know, we're in that mindset where people want to take care of it now, but we've been predicting these weather patterns. Astrologically, they're there to see. Numerically, they're there to see. Listening to people like you, they're there to see. Now, how would you explain them? I know how we explain them. Do you want to give me an explanation for 9,000 people dying in China today and a million dying in Burma the other day?
I know.
What used to be Burma? What is that? Or the tsunami a couple of years back? Or all the tornadoes in the United States?
Okay.
What's going on?
First of all, just to explain Earth changes, there's a whole level to how the Earth and earthquakes function that is not understood by our scientists, in which the core of the Earth is not molten iron like they think. The reason why they say that is because the Earth has a magnetic field, and they're so disingenuous they can't imagine a magnetic field created by something other than iron. The evidence actually suggests that the center of the Earth is more like a star, and I'm not saying that there's a hollow Earth and there's people living in there. But what I am saying is that the center of the Earth is
energetic. Some people say that.
Well, yeah, but I don't believe that.
Okay, good.
So the center of the Earth appears to be energetic, and it appears that there are electromagnetic and non-electromagnetic but still energetic interactions between the center of the Earth and the sun. So this explains why, as the sun keeps having climate change, we got more solar activity than in the past 11,000 years happening now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a documented fact.
Mm-hmm.
That this is also energetically streaming into the Earth. Now, if you take all the continents on the Earth and you remove the oceans, you shrink it down, get rid of the oceans.
We're practically doing that, aren't we?
Well, but all the continents fit together as a jigsaw puzzle. The Earth becomes 55% of its current diameter, and they all fit together. So it appears that there's some sort of energy streaming into the Earth, making it larger over millions of years of time. And we can model this out. It's actually all there in the seafloor spreading data from the what we've actually discovered. So The point is that this core of the Earth is energetic, not iron. And there's energy coming in through the solar system, which is amping up the pressure, the energetic pressure in the Earth's core. And this pressure, believe it or not, the energy that we're talking about, the Russians have gone into a lot of detail on this, is called torsion fields.
Yeah, the Russians are doing a lot of stuff. They're always ahead of us.
And they have discovered that this energy is very much akin to consciousness. In other words, consciousness interfaces with this energy and determines its behavior.
Let me make it simple for you, may I?
Go ahead.
Buzz Myers, who is now no longer with us, he was a great astrologer.
Yeah, I knew him in Virginia Beach.
Well, he was my astrologer for many years and my teacher for many years. A very dear friend. He worked for my husband and I after a while. He moved from Cleveland to Virginia Beach. And I was always welcome at the Edgar Cayce Foundation, and I took Buzz with me.
Right.
So you knew Buzz in Virginia Beach?
I did, yeah.
Okay, you knew, did you know him well?
Not very well, but we'd spoken a few times.
All right, so I knew him very well. And Buzz used to sit there, and we'd have dinner, and sometimes he'd come to visit my husband and I in Toronto. And as I said, I knew him long before I introduced him to my husband. I knew him, I guess, 16 years by the time I introduced him to my husband. And I'd studied with Buzz for years. Still don't know astrology, by the way, but I understand it, but I would never, ever even think to discuss it as if I knew anything. I know myself, but that's it. And Buzz said to me one day, you know, Mark, the crazier we behave, because we just had a horrible earthquake, he said, we cause these earthquakes. It's our electromagnetic field. So the more frightened we get and the more greedy or the more this
right.
and the more that, all our energy is collective and bango, an earthquake. And so what you're saying is basically what Buzz said, we, the people, sounds like I'm going to give a speech in the old days, right? Create these shifts in global things by our own thoughts and deeds in our electromagnetic field.
That's right.
And that's basically what you're saying in
right.
a scientific way.
Just to put it in a little bit more technical terms than that, the people in a given area, their level of consciousness is like a frequency.
Yes.
And the Earth is trying to raise in this frequency.
Yep.
And when people in a large area have disharmony, it forms what you could call a low pressure zone. And just like a weather front, the pressure flows from a high to a low. So there's like this blast of energy that comes from inside the Earth, which then hits these fault lines and causes earthquakes to basically release the energy in the low pressure zone, because that's where it goes.
Yes.
So it's a natural mechanism.
That we've all created, folks, all of us, and they have too in their countries.
Right.
And because if you look at in the United States, those people are unhappy, the farming, except for the ethanol, whatever. But all these tornadoes are, I mean, and all the things that are happening, simply said, we should take responsibility for it because we're a part of it.
Right.
We cause it. Well, no, I mean, don't go getting guilty on me like I didn't mean it that way. But, you know, we all are part of it. And the higher consciousness you are, and the nicer... The better things you think. And it's not always easy, am I right? It's not always easy to be up and happy. Woo-woo, happy
no.
days today.
No, I mean, it takes a lot of work.
It does. It takes a lot of work.
And
go ahead.
Anyway, I just, because I don't know how, if you can run 1 hour exactly or if you can run a little bit over. But
I can run a little bit over. It's my show.
Okay. Well, just before, if we do run over, I just want to make sure I get this said, which is that for those of your listeners who haven't actually heard me on your show before or who are not aware of my work, we're still just kind of scratching the surface of a very huge body of information.
Well, call Courtney. She's supposed to put your links up. Dude, that's her job.
Okay.
Okay, Courtney, where are the links? Courtney, we're just passing through, so talk
but,
to her.
But what I wanted to say is that ultimately this, what I can demonstrate is that there are even cycles of time that multiple scientists have validated in which the evolution of species on the planet is occurring not in slow, gradual movements, but in sudden spurts, meaning like you'll have 26 million year cycles that go by where all these creatures suddenly appear on the Earth that hadn't been there before.
Well, you know, I did Loch Ness on purpose because you know what I said? And again, I said to the next execs, I was in Toronto, I said, you know, I'm going to do Loch Ness. You know why? Because of global warming, the ice is melting and all these beasts that have lived under the ice are popping up. Nessie, Loch Ness, whatever, and there was one called Ogopogo in Canada. So, of course, because that looks like a fun little couch potato show for them. But we could prove through a bunch of scientists just what I said. And I got there by knowing people like Buzz and Robert John at Princeton and mm-hmm. people like that. And think of it. If there's a layer of ice, and now they're finding all these big fish and all these big things. Hello, I think we did Loch Ness, what, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a layer of ice. Our oceans go deep, and we still don't know what's under there. And they've been surviving under there all these years, these dinosaurs. If we had dinosaurs, what would make them think there aren't those things aren't underneath the ice? So then I went to see the chief of 100 nations in up past Vancouver. He's a big Native American chief. Of course, Bess Myers is big on Native American medicine. And I've noticed lately that all the animals are going lopsided when deers are running into coffee shops and, you know, bears are out of whack and coyotes,
right.
which is the trickster. That would be Obama. Sorry. But at any rate, and all these things going on, and Hillary and McCain, that would be the trickster, the coyote. We're all being tricked. Hopefully everybody's aware of what's going on. So we would watch animal medicine. And so that's going on too. And Nessie's part of the Amamesin. But the chief of Hunter tribe said this: yes, those things exist, but we don't want, they were great to us, my crew and I, but we don't want to tell you too much. Not that you would destroy it, Margaret, but because we know you. But they would put it on. You can go in the cave and you can see all the drawings. But the white man, or the man who doesn't believe in this thing, will come and they'll kill it. And we need it to survive so that the planet will survive. I remember, and he had tears in his eyes. It's almost like that commercial. Remember that commercial where the Indian's
crying, mm-hmm. with the garbage, yeah.
And my whole crew saw it, and I said, okay, we're not shooting today. Let's grab lobster and go on the lake. Mm. And so we did. And I mean, but we did do the Nessie thing, and it got great ratings. But, you know, and people think, oh, Margaret, you did Ogopogo. I'm like, yep, did it. But, you know, go to that place up in Canada, and you can pick out anybody. Put a blindfold on, grab somebody by the shoulder, and they'll tell you an Ogopogo story. Now, why is that?
Well,
because he exists.
It's more complicated than just the ice. There's actually also Mokili Mbembe, which is a brontosaurus that they keep seeing in Africa. And then there's also
Nessie in Scotland, Ogopogo in Canada.
In New Guinea, there's the Ropen, which is actually a pteranodon, this flying dinosaur. So what you touched on there is something that I go into in my presentations when I'm speaking from an audience, suggesting that time itself is not so easily disputed as just a linear phenomenon, that there's actually cyclical time.
Cyclical.
And we have these strange vortices in certain places of the Earth where timelines from the past and timelines from the present can temporarily superimpose. And if a creature happens to wander through one of these vortices, temporarily it will be able to manifest in our
That's another show, and I'm going to stop you there because I really would like you to do a whole show on that if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, sure, yeah, I'd love to.
Because I'd rather have you do a whole show because then people get tired. And please download the show and put it on your site so people can hear it there too. And Courtney has to get you up on this site. But I love your information. So you see, we think alike. I'm just from another generation, and I've had different teachers that you've sort of met, and you've had new teachers that I haven't met.
Yeah.
And together, we come up with the same information described different ways. Isn't it interesting?
It's all part of this mass awakening that we're being led through as a planet, which appears to be leading to these prophecies of a so-called golden age on Earth. I want to just emphasize before we end that it looks pretty scary at times and pretty depressing, but I do believe that there is a unified cause for all the changes we're seeing. It does amount to a spontaneous evolution that we're going through. You can see the signs of it throughout historical time leading up to the present, but I also believe that the changes we will see in the future are far more dramatic than what we've seen up until now.
Oh, it's going to get worse, because you know one last thing Buzz Meyer said to me?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, Mark, I'd just moved back to California from back east, and I'd lived in Peru and Argentina and you name it, in Scotland and blah, blah, blah. And he said, Mark, you're going to be at the head of the boat. I'm like, Buzz, what boat? I don't want to be in any stupid boat. If everybody else is drowning, I'm going too. He goes, no. You're leading the boat. And I'm like, oh. I mean, I don't even know what that means, Buzz. And look what we're doing. We're doing a radio show. We are leading the boat. Not anything I wanted to do, by the way.
Mm.
This is something I was forced into. But now that we're here, we should all be a tag team. We all have different sites, but there isn't anything wrong with, you know, doing it on a site and letting everybody hear it. Because according to Buzz Myers, I'm on the boat, and look at, I'm collecting all these great sailors. You know, all I'm doing is just sitting at the head of the boat like that thing I'm the king of the world boat, where they have that woman on the front of the boat, and then all the passengers, you guys are the passengers. I'm just like that carved, do you remember that, what was that called?
Sure.
The Titanic.
Yeah.
Do you remember there's that woman, you know, like, yeah, well, I'm not the real woman, I'm that carved person. But Buzz is like, you're going to lead this boat. I'm like, what boat? Now all of a sudden I'm sort of getting an idea, and I'm not crazy about it, but we're going to do it, you know? So hopefully you'll be a sailor on my ship.
Sure. Well, we're doing it right now.
Yeah, and you'll gather others.
And it would be great, as we talked about before, to actually get some kind of television show with some of my information out there, because I have information that's much more advanced than what you ever usually hear.
And there are boys out there who don't want you talking.
Oh, of course, but, you know, we'll deal with them as we have to.
Television's leaving, my friend. It's all going to Internet. I ought to know, because we're in fights every day, and I mean litigation over Internet sites. I've been offered, I mean, we get over 35,000 unique hits a day just on Joel and I, and God knows what you guys get. I haven't looked at you guys. But major networks want to buy this website. So do motion picture companies. I won't sell it. The reason they want to buy it is so they can edit it and mm-hmm. shut it down. And I would rather let it be, you know, so if people start downloading and keep it alive, we can all say what we have to say, and eventually it'll help your movie and things will help. I'm not quite sure where it's going. I'll think about it later. I'm just going to do it now. And when I say they want to buy it, believe me, that means Joel and I have to do a show that they want. We're back to doing documentaries. Mm-hmm. We left network for that reason, so we could speak out the truth of documentaries. Then we're doing documentaries and they're fab. Then all of a sudden they put these stupid, you know, Simmons with his long tongue, who cares? And so we say bye, and then they want our internet rights, and we're like, no, you can't have internet rights. And now, as you saw, the writer's strike was all about internet rights. Mm-hmm. Now the actors are doing it, because there'll be no television in a few, and so where you're going to be doing, think of this, webisodes. That's what we'll be doing in the future, my friend, mm-hmm. webisodes. So you can get a little cam on your computer, and one day I'll do it when I feel like coming back on camera, which I do a lot. I just did a show. And we'll be doing webisodes, and then they'll come want us to, you know, they'll want to own them too. So,
well, look at like barelypolitical.com with the big-breasted Obama girl. I mean, that video has been seen like, what, 9 million times?
Yeah, and that sort of says, doesn't it sort of say it? You know, they want to see that. They want to see girls saying, you know, I'm Obama with big breasts. That's why the radio is more interesting, because it's been seen 9 billion times as a joke. I don't particularly want to have 9 billion hits because we're a joke. I like my 35,000 unique hits a day because we're not a joke.
Absolutely.
I prefer 35.
People want the truth.
That's right.
And we're giving it to them.
And it's only a year old, and we're growing. So come on, and when are we going to do this show? On the dinosaur, on my little Ogopogos and Nessies and all that stuff.
Well, I actually have a conference coming up in Hawaii, and mm-hmm. then I have another one called Harmony Festival coming up in Santa Rosa. So there's a lot of stuff going on in my schedule right now, but I would say maybe after I get back from Hawaii, maybe as early as next Wednesday, we could do a show or sometime thereafter.
That would be the 21st.
Yeah.
So let's put David down, people, for the 21st, and you see he's going to Hawaii, and he's going where else?
Well, the Harmony Festival is going to be in Santa Rosa. I have a...
And why do you think he's going here, people? Because, I mean, the people listening understand it, but there are those... I'm not talking down to our audience. I'm talking to the people who track me every single day. Fox,
right.
CNN, Oprah, Harpo, Dr. Phil, all you people who try, you know... Hello, and Ted Turner, Ted, call me. For all you who are tracking me, ABC, NBC, run the gamut.
Well, I'm being given a 10-minute exclusive talk time on the main stage in between major musical acts at this major musical festival.
Who's singing?
Well, Damien Jr. Gong Marley, Bob Marley's son, is going to be there.
Oh, we have Ziggy on a thing in our vault. He did with Glass Nine stuff. That's cool. Bob Marley, who else?
Parliament, Funkadelic, there's going to be the Mickey Hart Band. He's the drummer from the Grateful Dead.
Well, good. Then it's a big deal, guys.
Oh,
see?
Yeah.
So then, David.
It's been going on for 30 years. It's huge.
Well, good. Well, then there you go.
And that's going to be, I mean, I'm just so honored that they're giving me this exclusive spot. But the point is, all the biggest expo organizers who are doing these major, major conferences where people get together, they all kind of go to each other's events. And I have been, I mean, I'm not trying to brag, but I have been blowing out in terms of ticket sales and attendance everyone else in my entire field.
Good for
when
you.
I do these talks. Everybody ends up going to my talk. I've got standing room only. It's like overflowing into the hallways.
I saw it. I went to one to watch you and William Henry. Where is little William Henry these days?
Well, he's got his own stuff happening. He's in...
Is he in Egypt again right now?
I'm not sure, but he's locally based in Nashville.
I know. And, we have chats, but I walked in, you guys were in there, and they were like in waiting, and the women were fighting the men. I just thought it was hilarious. They were all fighting to get into your thing. I thought it was funny.
Well, I think that what's happening is because I offer a positive perspective. I'm not saying we're all going to die or get incinerated or be washed away in a tidal wave. Those are the things that appear to be happening, but there's a deeper level to what's going on, which I enunciate in great detail about the fact that we're part of a perfect plan being orchestrated by higher intelligence, guiding us through a collective evolution which cannot be suppressed, cannot be held down by
nope.
the power structure.
Well, obviously we're watching, aren't we? We're watching. Just watch CNN. You'll see everything you said come true, right?
Yeah.
So just watch it. For some people, it is a bad day. For some people, they are going to get blown away and drowned, and houses are going to fall on like the Wizard of Oz. But others aren't. And I don't know why the ones who were getting houses dropped on them and getting drowned, that's awful. I feel, God bless them. I'm sorry for them. I have no idea why they chose that, but, you know, I don't know how we can go there. You can do that the next show.
Well, there's
okay?
a lot of dynamics. There's,
well,
there's
that's
changes,
another show.
Negative and positive, and you got to choose what you're going to look at and focus on.
Well, you're going to do that the next show with the dinosaurs and my under my ice theory with my chief of 100 nations and letting everybody grab lobsters and water ski.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. David, please, you know, we'll talk to Courtney. We'll get you linked up. I wish that's her job. And tell them to come listen to your show and let them listen, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Night-night.